We'll dismiss our children's church and junior church now. And I know some of them are going to be packing boxes. Nowadays, when you say someone's packing, you got to be careful. So, Jeff said he didn't know what I was, one of these Jeffs said they didn't know where I was going today. And I was sitting there thinking, well, I don't either. But we're going to talk about the wise men today. And, I love Christmas and everything about it. And almost everything about it's a miracle. Well, I mean, everything about it's a miracle. And unbelievable. Remember, we talked about that last week. So we're going to talk about something else unbelievable today. And I have no idea if it was like this or I kind of like this one here. I have no idea. Not a clue. Plus, I mean, it's irrelevant, but we don't even know if there was three of them. Could have been two, or there could have been six or eight. I don't know, but hey, I like three. So we're going to go with three. And maybe it was that way. My goal for today's message is for all of us to try to imagine how grand, how intricate, how perfectly orchestrated was the first coming of Christ. I mean, you just think about all of the circumstances that had to get done, had to come into play for it to happen. And I hope you never again read the story about the first coming of Christ, Christmas, without a sense of awe and wonder. It's not just a neat story. It's a true neat story, and it's beautiful, and it's, oh my goodness, is it complicated. So we're going to read in Matthew chapter 2, and we're going to talk about it. Now, it's interesting, and I don't know why. Matthew's the only one who talks about the wise men. But if you go to Mark, he didn't talk about Christmas at all. Was he a Scrooge? No, I don't think so. Mark had a reason. Well, the Spirit of God had a reason why he inspired Mark to start with John the Baptist's ministry. So, Luke, we go to Luke for a lot of our Christmas story, but he doesn't mention the wise men. So here we are in Matthew chapter 2. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him, and assembling all the chief priests, scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ would be born. And they told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it was written by the prophet." And then they quote Micah, which we looked at last week. "And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared, and he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go, search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him." Doesn't sound believable, does it? After listening to the king, they went their way, and behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy, and going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. Now, we start out in verse 1. It says, after Jesus was born. I don't want to make a big deal about this, but it was after Jesus was born. I love the wise men. And so if you have a nativity set, we've got, I don't know how many nativity sets. We kind of collect them, don't we? And we've got wise men with our nativity sets. They were called magi, the Greek word that we get, that we translate wise men is magos or magi. We do get the English word magician from it, but these guys weren't magicians. These guys were wise men. So who were those guys and where did they come from and what's their story? I mean, who were these guys? All right. So today we'll look at the story of the wise men and how God has intricately woven them into the Christmas story using a pagan prophet and another prophet of God. Now, I want to just, now don't freak out about this. We're just going to review real quickly, okay? Last week we talked about Isaiah and Micah. I got them up there about, and I'm compromising with Jeff. We didn't talk about this. He said 700, I said 750, so I got 725 up there. We get along. We can work together. So, last week we went back, we looked at Micah and Isaiah. Okay. Today, we're going to look at Balaam, so we're moving another 750 years further back to around 1450 BC. And then, we're also going to jump a little ahead of Micah and Isaiah. See, they prophesied around 725 or so. Daniel came later. And I put him at about 575, but he actually prophesied or was active from... And remember, B.C., we're working backwards. So he was from like 600 to, oh, gee, maybe 535, something like that. Long time, long ministry. And then the wise men, they're right up there. It's at the time of Christ. It's 4 B.C. So we're going to cover 1,500 years today. We're going to do it quickly. All right. Now, I love geography. If you don't, sorry. I got the beeper, the little clicker. All right, now look, don't freak out here. But I'm just going to show you here. Did I figure out this works? I don't know if this works or not. There, if I push the right button, it does. All right, this is the Middle East here, okay? Can you guys see it there? That's the Middle East right there. Okay, now forget, you can't read it very well. I couldn't find a map I could blow up far enough and have it still be readable. Jerusalem right there. Daniel was taken from Jerusalem and over to Babylonia or Babylon. Now, why the hump? Why that way? Why not? Look at that. Makes sense. For me, you know how many different roads I've taken around here and taken more time? Because it made sense to me. I live here. I'm going east. And so I'm just going to start going east. No, you don't really just go east. You turn this way and that way and then back that way and that way and that way. There's someone told me there's 12 stop signs between here and Lima on 81. 12. Yeah. So anyway, why not just go from here to there? Well, look, that's desert. All this is desert. This is Saudi Arabia, by the way. It's all desert. Nobody went across there. You'd be a fool to try to go across there. This is called the Fertile Crescent. That's the way people went. So if you wanted to go from Jerusalem to Babylon just to visit relatives, there's no way in the world you would cut across there. You wouldn't do it. You'd go up and around. So that's how Daniel was taken. Now, eventually Babylon gets conquered by Persia. Daniel's still there. Daniel served at least, he served Nebuchadnezzar, Nabopolassar, Darius, and Cyrus. Daniel was a stayer. I mean, he was a keeper. He ended up ruling the kingdom, kind of like Joseph did in Egypt. Daniel came and went wherever he wanted to go. And so we know for sure, we assume for sure, Daniel had a run of this whole kingdom. All right, so the Persian kingdom ended up being this big. Daniel all over the place. All right, now just keep all that in mind. It won't be a test, though. So where did the wise men get their information? You should be asking yourself that. Where did the wise men get the information? It says they came from the east, and almost everybody assumes, oh, the song says Orient. When you think Orient, you kind of think China, don't you? And really nobody thinks they were from China. And I would guess 95% commentators think that they came from Persia, which is modern-day Iran, by the way. Okay, so where'd they get their information? I say they got it from the scriptures. You say, well, wait a minute. These guys were probably pagans. They probably were. Well, at least to begin with, they probably were. But that's what happens to all of us until we run into the scriptures. Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word of God, right? How shall they hear unless someone shares the good news? So, I think they got their information from Numbers, Micah, and Isaiah, which Daniel had taken with him. Because Numbers was written long before Daniel. Micah and Isaiah prophesied 100, 150 years, I mean, depending on the beginning or end of Daniel. And I'm convinced when Daniel was taken by Nebuchadnezzar, he took the scriptures with him. Okay? Now here's one of those things. Why do things happen in your life? Especially why do things happen that don't seem positive? Or we look at somebody else and we go, man, excuse me, I can't believe that's working out that way for him. So go back to 605 BC. Excuse me. All right. We should be done now. Nebuchadnezzar comes and he begins to conquer Jerusalem. And we think in 605 BC, he takes Daniel to Babylon. You know who else he takes? Ezekiel. I don't know if you knew Daniel and Ezekiel knew each other. They worked at the same time. You know who else they knew? Jeremiah. Daniel, Ezekiel, Jeremiah, all prophets, all at the same time. All in Jerusalem area until Nebuchadnezzar comes, conquers the place, takes Ezekiel, the old guy, and Daniel, the young guy, takes them to Babylon and leaves Jeremiah. Now, your average person would say, oh, poor Daniel and Ezekiel, they got ripped out of their home and they got taken to this heathen land and, oh, it's going to be so bad for them. And Jeremiah, he got to stay. Yeah, well, who do you think had the good time and who do you think had the bad time? Jeremiah had a hard ministry forever, we think, until the day he died. Daniel and Ezekiel, they got to plant gardens, live in houses, come and go, it's one of those things. All right. But why do they happen? We don't know why things happen. And when we look at something happen and we start to draw conclusions that we shouldn't draw. But we do. We draw them anyway. So now, here's what we've got. We got Daniel, and he's taken to Babylon. And then Persia conquers Babylon. So just keep that in mind. I just threw that in there. 600 years later, 600 years later, the wise men make the same journey, only opposite. 600 years after Daniel, the wise men, after they've read the scriptures, and they put two and two together, and they decide, you know what? We're going to go check it out. So, verse 2, it says, where is he who was born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose. Saw a really good documentary years ago about some well-meaning people who were trying to find the star. And so, They did, they, they, they decided that it was a certain particular alignment of planets and things. And all, I mean, it was really complicated and exotic, and it was really neat, and it was a complete waste of time. But it was interesting. I mean, and they went to a lot of work, and they weren't trying to discount the story. They were trying to prove that the star was really there and really happened. And I go, you don't have to prove anything. It's written right here. It proves to me right here. Okay. So they said they saw his star when it rose. So that means that star wasn't anywhere around until, well, it was somewhere, but it wasn't seeable to any of us till it rose. All right. And when they come, they say, where is he who has been born? So I'm sorry, folks. They weren't there that night. Okay. But don't throw the wise men away. Just keep them there. It's okay. But they said, They saw his star when it rose, and they want to know where he who has been born is at, okay? This thing is really touchy. All right. I'm going to tell you what Balaam said. Almost 1,500 years before the wise men show up, Balaam. And you know who Balaam was? He was a heathen, pagan, sorcerer, hired to curse Israel. Okay, that's who Balaam was. He had no good intentions whatsoever till his donkey sat him down and had a talk with him. But that's another story. This is what Balaam prophesied. He said, there shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. That's Numbers 24:17, 1,500 years before the wise. And I think the wise men read that, and they look, and you know what? They read it and said, huh, we think there's going to be a king born in Israel. All right. So then they read Micah, and Micah says that this, not only does he say where, he says he, one who is to be ruler in Israel. Okay. And then Isaiah says that he's going to have a throne of David, forevermore. Forevermore. Always don't look back there. It's not Steve's fault. No. It's my fault. I didn't have the right size slides. So that's the way it is. So now verses 2-10 talk about the star. The wise men read, I'm convinced they read the scriptures. And that's because they're learned men, they're curious men. The scriptures had been left there by somebody a long time ago. Who do you think the somebody was? Daniel. And they said, let's read them. And so these guys read them. And you know what it is, though, what was strange with them that I think some people, even today, who go to church have a problem with, they read the scriptures and they believed them. Actually believed them. They said, golly, look at this. And so they believed it enough to go check it out, okay? And the star itself, it seems to be only visible to the Magi, doesn't it? It was real, it was purposeful, it did things, it showed up at certain times, it led them, it did come to rest over the house. Just throwing that in, over the house where the child was, okay? And then it was gone, all right? And we read that, and you know what? If the star was, if this was some kind of crazy alignment of planets, don't you think Herod would have been able to see it? Don't you think he wouldn't have had to ask the Magi, well, and then when you find it, come and tell me? No, he could have just followed the star. No, I think the only people that could see the star were the three wise men. That's what I think. It doesn't say so, but it doesn't make any sense any other way. The only three people that, or the only people that could see it, were the people that were following it. The people that it was supposed to lead to a particular place. Nobody else. So, now, verses 11 and 12. I'm going to read them again. And going into the house, they saw the child. And by the way, it is a different word than we use in Matthew or in Luke, where, you know, you'll find a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes. Okay. And it's a word more often used for a child. And they come in and they worship. So I told you before, I said these wise men were, I think, to begin with, I really don't think there was really any chance they were believers. I think this is kind of a, I wonder if it was a Gideon Bible. Because we hear these great testimonies, don't we, of people that pick up a Gideon Bible and there's nobody around at all to explain anything to them. Oh, wait a minute, maybe there is. Maybe the Holy Spirit, who is God, who then maybe was around back when the wise men were around, probably, and they're reading the scriptures and they don't have anybody to explain them to them, except maybe they do. They have the Holy Spirit. And so I'm wondering if when they read the scriptures, they believed. They at least were curious enough to go find out. And so I think, and I don't know this for sure, but I think that at the very least, when they went in, verse 11, and going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him. I don't know that you can worship God truly. And I sure get the idea they truly worshiped. I don't know that you can worship God if you're not a real believer. And I sure get the idea that they were worshiping. Then, opening their treasures, they gave him the gifts. And the gifts were gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And gold, of course, is kind of self-explanatory. That's what you give to royalty. You give something like that, expensive, gold. And the frankincense is something that they would have taken with them even if before they, if they weren't believers when they left. Frankincense is something that you take to any royal person or deity. It's incense. It's something you would burn. And it's an, and so it makes sense they would bring that. And myrrh is kind of interesting. Myrrh is something that at least is used in the embalming process. Back then it was. Used for some other things as well. It was kind of bitter. But it's interesting. The myrrh is the most interesting, I think, of the gifts. The gold makes sense. And the frankincense makes sense. But the myrrh is kind of prophetic. I'm wondering when they were saying, you know, what should we take with us? You got your bags packed? Yeah, I do. And, you know, and we don't know their names, but we think it's Gasper. Gasper, what are you taking? Oh, I'm taking some gold. Oh, that makes sense. Okay. Melchior, what are you taking? I think frankincense would be a good idea. Oh, yeah, that is. That's a good idea. So then you got Melchior. Wow, what should I take? Oh, I got just the right thing. Well, what is it? I'm going to take some myrrh. Myrrh? What are you thinking? Oh, just trust me. I don't know. Don't know what was going on. But anyway, so they come in, they give him the gifts. And this is really crazy. Being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. Now, if you've been paying attention, what other way is there? Right. Now, skeptics say, well, no, they actually went back the same way. They just skirted around Jerusalem and didn't let Herod know. Now, do you think three kings, three wise men, with obviously an entourage probably of who knows how many, probably camels, I would think, and Jerusalem not being very big back then, I don't even know if you could ride through Jerusalem today on three camels, unnoticed. But I seriously doubt if you could have back then. All right? No, I think they trusted God enough to say, by this time, I thought, you know, it doesn't make sense. This whole thing hasn't made any sense. So, if we're not supposed to go back that way, what other way is there? Well, there's the, and they did. And wouldn't you, I can't wait to hear their story. See? Now, and what's really neat is there'll be a time when there is no time, but I can only talk about it in time. So, and so all these questions we have, we'll have time, although it won't be time, you know what I mean? And so someday, although there won't be days, when I see the three wise men, or however many there were, I just want to hear their story, and it'll be okay, however long it takes. Okay? And I want to hear about it. I can't wait to hear this. We're just teased with this. To me, this is a tease. It's a wonderful story. I love it. And I just can't wait to hear all about it. Did you guys really cross the desert? Yeah. But everywhere we went, there were jugs of water and dates, you know, and pecan pies. I don't know. But see, do you think God could not do that? I mean, do you think for one second that God couldn't have taken care of these guys if they were going to honor Him? No hesitation. Now, my goal for today's sermon was for all of us to try to imagine how grand, how intricate, and how perfectly orchestrated was the first coming of Christ. See, last week we talked about Mary and Joseph and, oh my goodness, just them, but then not just them, but then, you know, the parents on both sides, the relatives, the neighbors, the whole, then we have to go to Bethlehem thing, all of that. And we haven't got to the angels yet. I love the angels. That's probably my favorite part. Harold. Love Harold. And so, I love how, I don't even know what that top line says, how the prophecies of Jesus are woven into the fabric of the story of the nation of Israel. All the way back to 1500 years before Christ, when some pagan king hires a pagan sorcerer to put a pagan curse on Israel, and he ends up prophesying about Jesus. See, who would have figured that? You know. And I mean, it's just one thing after another. God used Balaam, he used Daniel, he used wise men, he used a star, and then what else did he use? I don't know. But I can't wait to hear the story. So now, here, you know, before we leave here today, I want all of us to try to imagine how God has been orchestrating the events of our lives. Our lives. Over our entire lives. To weave the fabric of our own stories for our own lives, our own stories for a purpose. Kate and I are still trying to figure that out, aren't we? But we have no doubt that God's been in it, and He's had a reason for all of it. And you know, and I know today I'm looking at somebody who got some medical news that certainly they weren't looking for. And then there's somebody who was in the ER probably. There's a couple people I'm looking at that were in the ER. Somebody who was in a hospital bed. They're here today, but they were in a hospital bed this week. Somebody else had an emergency and has to get something checked up on. And then I don't even know about. See, that's just the ones I know about. And all of those, there's a reason and a purpose for it, but, you know, sometimes we figure it out and sometimes we don't. As a matter of fact, I think most of the time we don't. We may not, probably never will know how it all fits, what part we actually played. You know, even with today, this Christmas, you know, this place, these people, you know, just this year, last year, last Christmas, we both worked. I was in a hospital. She was in a crazy retail store. And last Christmas was kind of a blur to us. But did it not count? No, it counted. We're just not sure how. And so literally everything that happens to us and everyone around us are part of our story and in some way are working out as part of someone else's story. Okay? All orchestrated by the same God that brought us himself at Christmas. See, don't ever think that God, the same God, that's the thing, the same God. We have the same God as Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Same God that led the wise men. Same God that decided to break the news to the shepherds instead of the big shots. I love that part of the story. Our closing song repeats the phrase, "We will seek you. We will seek you. We will seek you." Enough times so that you will either get tired of it or do it. Okay? One or the other, really. I mean, it's, will we seek him? Jeff talked about how crazy things get and how we can get distracted. Will you seek him? Will I? You know, when this Christmas is over, will we have found him? Bible says that today is the day of salvation. How shall we be saved if we neglect so great a salvation? And the answer, of course, is we won't. And so what a great day to be saved by trusting Christ as Savior. And I never assume any time I'm speaking to any group of people that everybody is saved. I hope so, and I assume at times that's probably the case. Never assume. I never, ever draw that conclusion, no. And if you're here today, you know, what a great day to be saved. I'll guarantee you. See, the best I can tell you is I was saved on a Saturday morning in the summer of 1975. Now, that's not bad. It's not bad. But If today's the day that you got saved or you rededicated your life or you decided to follow Christ with believer's baptism or just in some way seek him significantly different than what you had been, someone says, let's for instance, someone says, well, when did you become a Christian? You'll go, oh, that's easy. It was a week before Christmas, 2018. You may even forget the date. Oh, I don't know what the date was. But you'll never forget it was a week before Christmas, 2018. It'll be part of your story. I mean branded. It'll be like the mark of the beast, branded on your forehead. Only it'll be a good one. You know, I'm sorry. That was a bad one. Okay. So seriously, today, I mean, what a great day. So as we sing, as the music group comes up, and you know, we think about how neat the wise men's story is, think about seeking him.